Here's how the extensive contact list works. You first prepare a paper containing every possible phone number, email address, pager number, etc., where a patient could possibly be reached. This might include their home phone, cell phone, husband or wife's cell phone, work phone, pagers, email, work email, home email, and always ask if they check it and how often and which one they're most likely to check, their fax at home, their fax at work. Now, you don't just slide somebody this piece of paper along with their health information and hope they'll figure it out or fill it out. You're going to have to ask them these questions and always start with the easiest question to answer. If you just slide a piece of paper over to somebody and hope they're going to write down their email, you're delusional. They don't want to get spammed. So you have to start small. Dr. Cialdini talks about this. You can get anyone to open up and talk to you if you can just get them to open their mouth and comment on something you say. You see, people really want to talk. They really want to open up, but you got to start small. So you start with their home phone number. Everybody's ready to give you that if they're in a doctor's office. Then you get their cell phone number. Now you can reach them just about anywhere they're at. Then you get their work phone. And when you get their work phone, I always say, is it okay for us to call you there? And if they say yes, have them initial a little space there that says you were told that you could call them at work. Pager numbers, home email, work email. Start small and work up to email, because email is the thing they're afraid of. They get, some of them, 50 junk spams every single time they open their email. All right, next, and very important, ask the patient which of these phone numbers or email addresses is the most reliable, predictable way to reach them. And after they tell you that, then ask them the next most reliable way to reach them and go right on down the list until you have the least reliable way to reach them. Now, once they tell you, for example, that it's email, when you do email them, ask them to respond with another email stating that they've received your reminder. If the patient doesn't respond to your email, assuming email was given as the most reliable way, you then proceed on to the next most reliable method, and if that's a cell phone or home phone, then you call them. At some point, as you struggle to reach the patient who has acknowledged the need for reminder contact, you're going to need to build in a default cancellation system. This actually starts with the patient's first visit to the practice. On that first visit, it should be made clear in writing to the patient that failure to acknowledge your reminder communications will result in a default cancellation of the patient's appointment. Default cancellation policies are like other aspects of the system that we've been laying out here. It's a factor of peak demand volume. If you're currently enjoying overwhelming peak demand patient volume, go ahead and institute a default cancellation policy. You see, this could appear a bit repressive to some patients, so it's usually reserved to the practices that are already experiencing a high degree of perceived validity. On the other hand, if things are slow, forget the default cancellation policy. Wait until you have patients to spare before you institute a policy that might not be welcomed by your marketplace. All right, next. In practices where patient volume is substantial and every failed appointment represents a lost opportunity to the practice, I suggest that you institute a missed appointment penalty. This is usually in the form of a flat fee cost for missing an appointment without giving a 24-hour or 48-hour notice to the practice. Now, this might be illegal in some states, but don't worry, we're not going to ever charge the patient for missing the appointment anyway. This is simply a deterrent. Most of you have learned that you can't afford to offer credit to your patients because, for the most part, they can't be trusted to pay their bill once they leave the office. For this reason, I can't think of a single practice that still extends credit to their own patients. This said, we still do have practices, however, that allow patients to block valuable time in the practice and then fail to show up. As I said earlier, the penalty is really nothing more than a deterrent to discourage patients from taking their appointments too lightly. Now, I know what you may be thinking. What kind of deterrent is an empty threat? I'm going to answer that question. Just give me a second. All right, next, I want to talk about the criteria for applying the penalty. In other words, when do you charge the patient for missing the visit? I want you to remember that you're never going to charge the patient for missing the appointment. This is a deterrent-only policy. The penalty agreement is introduced on the first visit, and the patient is asked to sign a small slip of paper stating that they understand that they can be charged a specific amount of money for missing or late notice canceling their appointment. When the patient misses or calls after the 24-hour cancellation zone, the penalty is then brought up to the patient. The patient calls apologizing for canceling late or missing the appointment altogether. The staff person then mentions that they will have to charge the patient for missing the appointment. The staff person then pauses, tells the patient to hold, she talks to the doctor, and comes back and gives the patient a free pass. The patient is then invited to reschedule. When the patient misses the second time, depending on the excuse, death, accident, etc., the penalty is once again mentioned. The person is given a second pass, again after talking to the doctor, but asked this time to prepay a deposit for their next visit. And yes, this will cause some patients to quietly disappear from the practice. But which ones will you be losing using this system? It's the ones that fit the profile that we marked as number 4. You'll recall profile number 4 was made up of the patient whose lives are chaotic beyond their control. This patient's missed appointment probability profile should be kept on record. In the event they should approach the practice again, you'll know what to do. If you'll recall from our discussion of patient profiling, this is the second type of patient profile, the one kept in the patient's electronic file. If you've flagged a patient as a high risk for missing their appointment, you've got to make a decision on whether or not to let them back into the practice, make them give a deposit on their visit, only offer them unpopular times, and finally, letting them onto the peak time of the schedule. See, if you don't have the staff time available to herd high-risk types back into the practice, you're going to have to resort to one of the other options, namely, not allowing them access to the popular appointment times or making them pay a deposit before they come back into the practice. That is, making them pay a deposit on their visit before they can come back into the practice. All right, next. Earlier I mentioned the default cancellation policy of the practice as being the fifth component in the perfect schedule system. I listed this as the fifth and last component because when you actually go to apply this policy, it's one of the last things you do as the patient fails to respond to your reminder contact. However, this concept must be introduced on the patient's first visit in much the same way the financial penalty is used. The default cancellation policy simply states that if the practice is unable to reach the patient during the reminder phase, their appointment can be canceled. This is done in much the same way the airlines give away your seat 15 minutes prior to departure. Your decision on whether to institute a default cancellation policy should be based on your peak time patient volume. If you're overrun during the popular times, then by all means, institute a default cancellation policy. If you're underutilized, on the other hand, hold off on this component of the perfect schedule system. The default cancellation policy that you've just now received completes this system. You now have the information you need to perfect your schedule. Yes, every practice can have a perfect schedule every day. So does every Whitehall practice have a perfect schedule? The answer is no. And there's two reasons that practices fail to perfect their schedule. First, they simply don't use this system as it's been outlined. And two, they don't have enough non-clinical staff to fully implement this concept. In this recording, we've examined the late stages of the missed appointment problem. I promised you earlier that we would look at the early stages of the problem as well. I'm referring to patients that consciously choose your competitor's practice over your own. In other words, I'm talking about what I call your defensive marketing, namely your Yellow Pages. Even the most referral-oriented practices still use them. See, most practices spend a small fortune on the Yellow Pages and get very poor results. And what makes it worse, 2 months into the cycle, they know they've got a bad ad and they have to pay for it 12 more times before they can change it. I promised earlier that we'd get Wes Warren from Zone 5 Marketing to step in and share some of his wisdom and experience on how to make your Yellow Page ads finally start to pay. Wes, thanks for being with us. I know you've seen everything. What can you tell us about how to make our Yellow Page ads more effective?